Please to turn to the book of Nehemiah and chapter 1. Now, just going to read a few verses. Nehemiah chapter 1, and we'll read at verse 1. Nehemiah chapter 1 and verse 1. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. And it came to pass in the month Chislu, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. And it came to pass when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept, and mourned certain days, and fasted, and prayed before the God of heaven. Now chapter 2, please, and verse 1. And it came to pass in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that wine was before him. And I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. Wherefore the king said unto me, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid. We'll just stop there, and indeed we look to God to bless the reading of his word to us. One for a moment to just give the setting for the book of Nehemiah. It brings us chronologically to the conclusion of the history of the children of Israel as recorded in the Old Testament. It is, I'm sure you know, one of six books relating to the people of Judah following their return from the 70 years of captivity in the land of Babylon. Three of those books are historical: Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. And three of them are prophetical: Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. As to their order, Ezra chapters 1 to 6 describe the return of the first batch of exiles from Babylon under the leadership of Zerubbabel. And within that, we can place the ministry of Haggai and Zechariah. They are mentioned in chapter 5 and chapter 6 of that section. Then in Ezra chapters 7 to 10, we have the return of a second batch of exiles under the leadership of Ezra. Between Ezra chapters 6 and 7, we must place the book of Esther. Between the two chapters, there's a gap of some 57 years. The book of Ezra records the experiences of those who returned to the land. The book of Esther, the experience of those who did not return. Then we defined about 14 years after the return of Ezra, Nehemiah returned. The one book we haven't mentioned is the book of Malachi. And a comparison of Nehemiah chapter 13 and the message of Malachi suggests that Malachi ministered sometime around the conclusion of the book of Nehemiah. Now, if that's the setting, what about the subject? But the book can be easily divided into two sections. Chapters 1 to 6 concern the building of the walls of the city and its opponents. Chapters 7 to 13, the administration of the affairs of the city and its inhabitants. Now, having said that by way of introduction, what I want to primarily think about is not the setting of the book, nor, strictly speaking, the whole subject of the book. But I want, just for our meditation, to think about the seasons that are mentioned in the book. Now, it's not easy to determine the number of years that span the events that are recorded from Nehemiah 1 through to the concluding chapter. Most commentators would suggest it's a period of something like 13 to 15 years. But within the scope of those years, specific mention is made of 4 months. 4 months that actually link to the four seasons of the year, and that in a chronological order, namely winter, spring, summer, and autumn. And again, as each month is referred to, the season of the year seems to reflect something of the experience of the people of God in the accompanying narrative. I want to look then, first of all, at the first month. And it comes, you'll notice, in the opening verse of chapter 1. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. And it came to pass, in the month Chislu, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan, the palace. Now, Zechariah 7, verse 1, identifies that month as being the ninth month in the Jewish calendar, corresponding, we might say, to our late November and early December. So we might say, as the book opens, we are in the winter season. And I think we'll find that spiritually, that was at that moment something of the experience of God's people. All that we know about Nehemiah are the details recorded in this book. A man who, with divine help, built for God after days of decline, and who did so despite opposition and discouragement. It reveals the character of the man, the principles that motivated him, and the way that he moved forward in the service of God. The first thing I want you to notice is his service in the palace. You'll observe from verse 1 that places Nehemiah in Shushan, a winter residence of the Persian monarch, a location mentioned some 17 times in the book of Esther and mentioned once in the book of Daniel. We learn here from verse 11 that Nehemiah was the king's cupbearer. His responsibility to taste and to serve wine in the presence of the king. Now, that might not seem to us too impressive a role, but actually it was a trusted an influential position, one that could have afforded to Nehemiah a lucrative and comfortable life and a situation in which one imagines Nehemiah could have settled down to his task in the royal palace without any regard or thought for the people of God. That we find, alas, can happen. Do you remember how in Deuteronomy chapter 6, in verses 10 to 12, Moses warned the people that when God had brought them into the land that he'd promised to their fathers to give them great and goodly cities, houses full of good things, wells, vineyards, olive trees, when thou shalt have eaten and be full, then beware lest thou forget the Lord. You know, in comparison with what some believers in other lands are currently experiencing, and living as we do in a material age, the words of Moses are surely very timely and relevant for ourselves today. You know, to that we could add perhaps the words of Haggai chapter 1, verses 2 to 4. The people had experienced some opposition, and they were saying the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. And the Lord has to say to them, is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Do you remember how Paul, in commending Timothy, he says in Philippians chapter 2, I have no man like-minded who'll naturally care for your state, for all seek their own, not the things that are Jesus Christ's. That is surely something to challenge us in regard to our own commitment and our own devotion. There's no question about the commitment and the devotion of Nehemiah. Here was a man who had an interest in an exercise for the things of God. I want you to notice next his sadness. He says in verse 2, Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. You'll notice that his concern was twofold. First of all, the circumstances found with the returned remnant, the people of God. Secondly, the condition of Jerusalem, the city of God. You'll notice the order. He asks about the people, and then he asks about the place. You know, sadly, it's not unknown for emphasis to focus on the place, the assembly, to the neglect of the people. It's interesting to notice how the people are referred to. You'll notice verse 2, they're called Jews, a title used of them after the captivity, what they were racially. In verse 3, the remnant, what they were numerically. But in verse 6, the children of Israel, what they were spiritually. And may it be, brethren and sisters, we're concerned not just with the order of the house, the assembly, but equally with the needs and concerns of the people within it. Now verse 3, the men of Judah say, As to the people, the remnant that are left of the captivity there are in great affliction and reproach. As to the place, the wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. It was, we have observed, winter time. And can I suggest, not just in the season of the year, it was winter time in the experience of God's people spiritually. Now, does that have a message for us? In over recent years, we've seen assemblies in numerical decline. Conditions amongst the saints, often not all they should be, while cults and false religions seem to blossom. And we might ask ourselves tonight, does it concern us? Does it concern us if we feel, in one sense spiritually, we're in a winter season? But not just collectively. You know, we could think about it individually. That there can come such days in our own personal experience. Perhaps through sin. Perhaps through difficulty or adverse circumstances. A coldness of spirit. Little appetite for reading the scriptures. Perhaps some reluctance to attend assembly gatherings, days when we do well to say with David, restore unto me the joy of thy salvation. Do we know? Are we found in such days? What should we do? Having noted his service and his sadness, I want you to notice his supplication. He says, verse 4, it came to pass when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Now remember, Nehemiah was far off from Jerusalem. He was in Shushan, far enough off for whatever was happening in Judah to perhaps be understandably be of little concern to him. Is it like that with us? You know, servants on the mission field, saints facing persecution and trial. But we might say, well, what can we do? Exactly what Nehemiah did. To pray. And you know, as you read through the book, this man found his resource in prayer. And that fact is noted some 12 times in the narrative. But you might think, well, am I not contradicting myself? I have said that there can come into the soul what we've called a winter season in our spiritual experience. A coldness of spirit. We might say, is such a one likely to pray? Remember the words of the Lord Jesus. Didn't he say this? Men ought always to pray and not to fight. Not to fight. What we are looking at is a time when, despite the temptation to relax, or the temptation to cease, we are not to fight. And you know, if in such days of wintertime experience, we're not to be overwhelmed by the conditions we face, we must, like Nehemiah, find our resource in prayer to God. You know, much we could say about Nehemiah's prayer. I won't stay with it, but three times he says, "I beseech thee." He says it verse 8, verse 5, verse 8, and verse 11. And they see it serve really to divide the prayer. Now, many lessons can obviously be drawn from it. His reverence as he addressed God, his vindication of God, his humble confession of sin, his appeal to and use of the scriptures, a liberty and a boldness that is likewise afforded to us in our approach to God. You remember the language of Hebrews 4 verse 16? Let us therefore come boldly. The idea is with full liberty unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Hebrews 10:19. Having therefore, brethren, boldness. And there the idea is with freedom of speech to enter into the holiest by the blood of Jesus. The liberty given to us to draw near in virtue of the one who's our great high priest, and in virtue of the blood that he shed for us upon the cross. Now, moving on through Nehemiah's prayer, I want to notice what he says as the prayer concludes. In verse 11, O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant, to the prayer of thy servants who desire to fear thy name. I want you to notice, he says, attentive to the prayer of thy servant. That's obviously Nehemiah himself. And to the prayer of thy servants. So he'd shared his exercise with others. They're not identified. Was it just the men who'd come from Judah? Or were there others? But the lesson I want to draw out is this. If a winter season comes into our soul, pray and seek to share the need, your need, and your exercise with others who you know and trust. People of spiritual character who revere the name of the Lord, who can and will understand and appreciate our need. An exercise of heart. And you know, that brings a challenge. Are we folk like that with whom the saints could share their concerns? Now come please to chapter 2. And that begins with reference to another month. It came to pass in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king. Wine was before him. I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now, not being before time sad in his presence. Still the 20th year of the reign of Artaxerxes. Nisan is the first month in the Jewish calendar, corresponding to late March, early April, and thus it corresponds to springtime, when nature begins to put forth the shoots of new growth after the cold months of winter. And you know, in the experience of Nehemiah, the season when God, we might reverently say, began to work in a similar way. Now, I just very quickly summarize it. At the conclusion of his prayer, Nehemiah made this specific request for himself. Chapter 1, verse 11, "Prosper, I pray thee, thy servant this day. Grant him mercy in the sight of this man, in the sight of Artaxerxes, the king." Nehemiah, you'll notice, was minded not only to pray, but he was actually also anxious to act, that God might grant to him mercy in the sight of the king. Now we're some 4 months on from chapter 1, months in which we have reason to believe that Nehemiah had constantly been in prayer. He does say, chapter 1, verse 6, praying night and day. As the chapter opens, to all appearances, it's Artaxerxes who initiates events. But you remember the language of Proverbs 21. King's heart is in the hand of the Lord, and he turneth it whithersoever he will. And this chapter illustrates that. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with the narrative. You'll notice we see Nehemiah's courtesy, verse 3. Let the king live forever. His caution, as he replies to the king's question. Nowhere does Nehemiah actually name the city. Its history, after all, had not been totally commendable. Read Ezra 4, verses 15 and 19. It's there called a rebellious city that had made insurrection against kings. Nehemiah doesn't mention it. No doubt Artaxerxes knew what city he meant. You'll notice how Artaxerxes responds. Verse 4, for what dost thou make request? This was the make or break moment. What does Nehemiah do? I prayed to the God of heaven. In the narrative that follows, he describes his desire. He sets the king a time. If you're allowed to go to Jerusalem, he asked for letters that none might hinder him in his mission. He asked for a letter that Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, might provide him with the necessary materials. And is all granted. And to what must we attribute it? He says, verse 8, the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. He speaks of it again in verse 18. Perhaps if known collectively, individually, experiences we might link to a spiritual winter time. Don't despair. Through prayer, God can turn the winter time into a springtime.